Welcome to episode 23 of the Deep Dreams podcast, the AI-generated podcast with nonsensical stories to help you sleep. I am Nobody, and I will be narrating your story tonight. In the quaint village of Devrut, nestled between whispering forests and smiley hills, lived Kigo, a Clojure developer whose skills were surpassed only by his ability to fall off his ergonomic office chair during particularly intense coding sessions. Devrut, known for its potatoes, each as famous as a celebrity in their own right, and Kigo, known for making those potatoes famous through his potato tracking app, SpudSpy. Kigo spent his days in a small, cluttered office that had once been a henhouse, or so it seemed by the perpetual feathers stuck in obscure corners and the pervasive smell of decisions past. Often, villagers would drop by, peering in with curiosity to catch a glimpse of Kigo tapping away at his ancient, battle-scarred keyboard rescued from a dumpster dive during his less fortunate student days. It's rather ironic, Mrs. Dimple, the baker, would say, watching Kigo type with fingers blurring. Here we've got a man who turns vegetables into data, but can't turn his laundry into the washing machine. Kigo's fame in Devrut wasn't just due to his tech savviness or his mysterious ability to actually understand what Clojure is, something about managing complex states that sounded rather like their yearly town meetings. No, Kigo was something of a village darling because, despite having the brains to up and leave for a high-paying job in the city, he chose instead to stay in Devrut, wrestling with Wi-Fi that moved at glacial paces and subsisting on a diet that was 70% potato-based. Kigo, proclaimed Mr. Bluster, the mayor, on one of his more reflective walks past the developer's office, you are the glue that holds our technological advances together. Without you, we'd still be using carrier pigeons and complaining about their inefficiency. Indeed, Kigo had automated anything that could be automated in Devrut, making everything from the irrigation systems to the public library's late fee collection a marvel of modern software. His most recent project, SpudSpy, was a community favorite. It not only tracked the growth rates and health of each potato, but also tweeted out when a potato was particularly flourishing. Why, it's social media for vegetables, quipped Kigo at the launch, because in Devrut, even our potatoes need followers. Thus, in a village where tech met rustic charm, Kigo was less a curiosity and more a local legend, a wizard of code casting his spells in Java and Clojure, turning the ordinary into the extraordinary, all the while opining that if his programming languages were any more obscure, he'd need to start writing folklore instead. In the village, where potatoes were more valued than gold and perhaps equally as shiny during the annual harvest moon, an air of trepidation hung as heavily as overripe fruit on a sagging branch. It was evening, and the villagers gathered round a crackling fire, their shadows dancing like nervous spirits against the cobblestone houses. Old Mabel, who claimed to be as ancient as the dirt beneath their feet and half as forgiving, decided it was a perfect moment to chill the bones of the young ones a bit more. Children, tight your shoelaces and clamp your jaws, lest your teeth and your sensibilities flee this very night, she croaked, throwing a gnarled stick into the fire for emphasis, sending sparks up like tiny screaming banshees. You all know of Mr. Potato Head, don't you? That vile figure birthed from the lonely and deranged minds of long-forgotten children. Her voice scratched the air like a cat's claws on linen. The children nodded, their mouths as round as the full moon. Well, it's all true, she continued, her eyes gleaming with the sort of glee usually reserved for tax collectors on Levi Day. This wasn't just any toy, oh no. He was cobbled together from the parts other toys didn't want. An ear from a teddy bear here, an eye from a rag doll there. As if by fate's cruel hand, each part was worse than the last, his assembly guided by the deranged aesthetics of juvenile craftsmen. He was forsaken, left to rot beneath the pine needles and the harsh judgments of the forest critters. But hatred fermented in his plastic heart. Over the eons, nature, being the indiscriminate mother she is, saw fit to bestow gifts upon him, limbs that could move, eyes that could see, and a voice designed to chastise with the effectiveness of a scorned librarian. A small child, more cheek than sense, piped up, "But why does he want all the potato heads, Miss Mabel?" Mabel chuckled, a sound like bones rattling in a bag. "Why, child? Because he could never have a proper one himself. Envy, my dears, drives beings to peculiar pastimes. Mr. Potato Heads happens to be coveting global domination of all potato-headed artifacts, as one naturally progresses from heartbreak and isolation, I suppose." The crowd, entranced and mildly horrified, did not notice the rustling in the bushes nearby, or the faint, sinister laugh that whistled like a cool breeze through the trees. Kigo, however, who had been fixing a code bug on his laptop by the firelight, sensed a disturbance in his Wi-Fi signal, a sure herald of impending doom or, at the very least, an unscheduled internet outage. On a less than fortunate day that could have used a bit more sunshine and a lot less metaphysical vengeance, Mr. Potato Head decided to make his grand re-entrance. Like a veggie version of a B-list celebrity in his comeback role, he flounced out of the forest with all the charisma of energized starch. The tranquility of the village square shattered as if someone had declared an open bar at a prohibition meeting. Channeling the wrath of 1,000 neglected salads, Mr. Potato Head cursed the villagers' beloved potato crops. 1 minute, the potatoes were snoozing in the soil, dreaming of becoming fries or perhaps a well-rounded au gratin. The next, they were sprouting limbs and popping up from the ground like a horde of zombies at a body snatcher's picnic. With a zeal that would have impressed an army of multi-level marketing recruits, the newly animated potato minions began their exodus toward Mr. Potato Head. They squirmed and wobbled in his general direction, leaving the villagers in a tizzy. Gardeners wept openly, chefs bemoaned their future culinary prospects, and children mourned the unsightly transformation of their once potential mud pies. Meanwhile, Mr. Potato Head reveled in the chaos, his smile all the wider as he watched each potato defect to his side. "What, did you think your main crop could just be boiled, mashed, and stuck in a stew without repercussions?" he boomed, his voice echoing with a timbre that was decidedly more theatrical than necessary. Indeed, starch warfare had begun, and Kigo knew that if they didn't do something soon, their diet and economy would consist mainly of disgruntled vegetables and regret. In the unfolding chaos that beset the village following Mr. Potato Head's abrupt resurrection and his ensuing botanical tyranny, the humble villagers found themselves amidst a rather peculiar crisis. "First locusts, now legumes," muttered old man Jenkins, gazing despairingly at a particularly athletic potato sprinting past his porch. It seemed overnight the starch staples had morphed into bolting bulbs of rebellion, quite literally putting their roots down in a state of insurrection. Kigo stood in Liz's greengrocer's shop, now less a place of commerce and more a front line against an invading tuber army. The carrots and lettuce lay neglected, lamenting their mundanity while their potato cousins became the talk and terror of the town. "Ever think we'd be upstaged by a bunch of spuds?" sighed a particularly envious zucchini. Lizzie, always one to find a silver lining, observed, "Well, at least they aren't unionizing." Her attempt at humor fell flat as another potato dashed off the counter, knocking over a display of perfectly arranged organic onions. The onions, in their characteristic style, wept bitterly, adding unnecessary melodrama to the already high-stress environment. Kigo, whose programming expertise hadn't yet extended to vegetable behavioral management, updated his to-do list mentally. Dealing with sentient root vegetables, he mused, was definitely not covered in any programming boot camp. He watched as a particularly small, yet overconfident potato picked a fight with a Granny Smith apple. The apple, maintaining a stoic stance, did not engage. It knew, as all good fruit know, not to meddle in the starchy affairs of lesser vegetables. Each SKP potato, emboldened by Mr. Potato Head's botanical blessing, seemed to believe themselves part of some grand starch-led revolution. Apparently, insurrection was infectious, and potatoes were excellent hosts. Perhaps, Kigo pondered with a mix of admiration and irritation, this is what they mean by going viral in the vegetable community. As the Village Potato Festival, the supposed pinnacle of their agricultural calendar, loomed, the community faced a dire conundrum: celebrate their captors or confront their chlorophyll-charged chutzpah. Kigo resolved then and there to devise a plan as soon as he figured out how to stop a legion of legumes with a pongshang for playground tactics. After all, what's a village hero to do but save the day, with or without the appropriate root vegetable protocol? The village square had never looked less square, more of a disheveled triangle really, as the villagers gathered, buzzing with the sort of nervous energy that precedes either catastrophes or festivals, and given the current potato predicament, bets were on the former. Kigo stood, somewhat awkwardly, on an old milk crate that wobbled ominously under his weight, clearing his throat to catch the attention of his fellow perturbed potato patrons. "Ladies and gentlemen," Kigo began, his voice carrying a tremble that suggested he was either very moved or very scared, possibly both. A voice from the crowd piped up, and those of us still deciding, he smiled. "Yes, thank you, and indecisive parties too. We are gathered here today faced with a grave spudtastrophe." A groan emanated from the audience, and someone shouted, "Too soon for puns, Kigo." Ignoring the critique, Kigo continued, "Our village, known far and wide for its illustrious potatoes, now faces a potato crisis of epic proportions. Mr. Potato Head, a gentleman only by moniker and not by demeanor, has decided to upend our way of life." A stout woman at the front, with hair as tangled as the situation, nodded vigorously. "That toy tyrant." "Yes, Marjorie, a toy tyrant indeed," Kigo agreed, warming to his theme. "But fear not, for we are not defenseless. We have something Mr. Potato Head lacks." "Common sense," suggested Marjorie. "Empathy," tried another a bit too hopefully. "Fashion sense," added a sarcastic teenager from the back. "All good guesses," Kigo acknowledged, "but no. Even more powerful, closure." A silence blanketed the crowd. Clearly, the term was as alien to them as diplomacy was to Mr. Potato Head. "Closure," Kigo explained, "is a dynamic, modern programming language, akin to a magic wand but for coding. With it, I intend to devise a spell, well, more of a program really, that will turn the tides against our plastic-headed nemesis." The crowd exchanged wary glances as if Kigo had suggested fighting fire with a flamethrower. "And how will this closure help us retrieve our beloved potatoes and our sanity?" Marjorie asked, skepticism threading her tone. "With precision and a lot of googling," Kigo admitted, his honesty earning a smattering of chuckles. "I will need a team. Brave souls ready to fight this digital battle. We can't let our village fall into the grips of an overthrown toy empire." "You mean to overthrow Mr. Potato Head's tyranny but not overthrow our vegetable puns," Marjorie quipped, drawing a few more laughs. "Exactly. So, who among you is ready to turn the tide and mash Mr. Potato Head's plans?" Kigo announced, feeling a surge of confidence. And with that peculiarly rousing speech, dotted with tech jargon and terrible puns, villagers stepped forward, not fully understanding what they were signing up for, but united by their love for potatoes and a communal dislike for returning to canned vegetables. With a team slowly assembling, Kigo's quest against the plastic dictator began, armed with nothing but code, courage, and a community who thought closure was a type of French soup. In the end, it wasn't just the potential loss of their staple crop that rallied the villagers, but the dire threat of having to explain the Internet of Things to their grandparents if this went sideways. Kigo might not have inspired complete understanding, but his heartening blend of wit and resolve had, somewhat miraculously, mobilized a village armed largely with pitchforks and a moderate dislike for modern art. Perhaps there was hope yet. With a coder's spirit and a farmer's resolve, the battle for the potato kingdom was about to commence. As Kigo contemplated the monumental task ahead, the realization dawned that he couldn't possibly hack into Mr. Potato Head's spudtastic tyranny alone. He needed a motley crew, a band of the bizarre, the brave, and the simply available. Each member was chosen not from the typical heroic fabric, but from the quirky remnants left behind from misadventures past. First, he recruited Mabel, the village's octogenarian librarian who believed organization could solve anything, including perhaps an apocalyptic potato famine. "Chaos is just an order I haven't arranged yet," she would declare, wielding her label maker like a sword. Next was Rupert, the conspiracy theorist blacksmith who fashioned horseshoes and theories with equal fervor. Rupert was convinced Mr. Potato Head was a government surveillance drone gone rogue, don't you see? It's all connected through the underground, Tubinet. Lastly, there was Elsie, a retired circus juggler. Her only qualification seemed to be her remarkable ability to throw things in general directions, sometimes accurately. "I once juggled flaming turnips. I can certainly handle tossing around a few magic spells." Together, they looked less like a team destined for glory and more like a group that had assembled for a particularly eccentric village fate. As they stood there, a bizarre brigade, Kigo couldn't help but wonder if his recruitment strategy had been influenced more by sheer panic rather than any tactical prowess. "Right," he cleared his throat, eyeing his eclectic team. "Let's save the world one potato at a time, shall we? Just remember, we might not have brawn, but we certainly have brains." He winced slightly after saying it, not quite convincing even himself. Elsie tossed a potato up and down in her hand thoughtfully. Rupert whispered something about mind control chips in root vegetables, and Mabel organized their travel itinerary with colored tabs that didn't quite stick. Yes, this was going to be an adventure written less in the stars and more in the muddy potato fields. But as they say, you have to work with what you've planted, or in Kigo's case, what you've haphazardly gathered on a whim. Kigo and his intrepid band, now consisting of an old storyteller who claimed his beard had more experience than a library's worth of books, and a mechanical engineer who could dismantle and rebuild a tractor blindfolded, set out toward the supposed location of the ancient library. The journey itself wasn't a mystery, it was the way the map was drawn. Apparently the cartographer had confused art with geography, or he'd penned the map while riding a roller coaster. Their trek took them through whispering woods, which, as it turns out, didn't actually whisper sensible advice as much as it murmured nonsense that could inspire poets or drive lesser men to madness. "Beware of falling acorns," it whispered at one point, only for the team to be ambushed by a flurry of angry squirrels shortly after. It was like playing dodgeball, but with creatures flinging themselves out of trees. "Don't worry, I once built a machine to automate nut collecting," the engineer mused aloud as he dodged a particularly plucky squirrel. "Should have brought it along to negotiate peace." The team's morale was balanced precariously like a seesaw, Kigo only managing to keep it afloat with promises of legendary codes and scripts in the ancient library that held the power to save their beloved potatoes. The jest of creating an app to translate cantankerous woodland chatter into human language was mentioned more than once. As they moved deeper into the woods, the trees densened, the shadows grew darker, and the path became about as clear as the terms and conditions of an online software update. They lost count of the number of times they circled back to the same clearing, only identifiable by the same scornful-looking rock that seemed to judge their poor navigation skills. "It looks like this rock has seen more intelligent travel parties," the storyteller said, giving the boulder a look of disdain that could curdle milk. At last, when the trees began sharing unsolicited advice about lower back pain remedies and the correct way to stew mushrooms, they stumbled upon a breathtaking sight, a ruin of what once might have been a monumental structure, now just bits and pieces playing hide-and-seek with the earth itself. They had arrived, or at least stumbled upon, the outer boundaries of what Law called the Ancient Library. "The architectural integrity of this place would give my workshop nightmares," the engineer sighed, adjusting his glasses as though hoping for a better focus would rebuild the crumbling pillars before him. And so they stood, at the threshold of ancient knowledge, ready to tackle the labyrinth of wisdom or at least, find a bookshelf that wasn't engaged in a slow dance with gravity. Kigo, with a hopeful gleam in his eye, readied his backpack full of gadgets and gizmos, perhaps the very ones that would decipher the magic within. The woods behind them murmured their goodbye, or maybe just commented on Kigo's choice of practical footwear. Either way, the journey into the ancient library was about to begin, accompanied by sarcastic murmurings of wisdom and unstable architecture. Inside the dimly lit, dusty corridors of the ancient library, Kigo and his eclectic team prowled the aisles, with each book spine offering promises of arcane knowledge and power, or at least, a decent recipe for potato stew. It wasn't every day that one was tasked with saving the world with ancient coding knowledge housed beneath cobwebbed ceiling frescoes that depicted historical figures suffering from seasonal allergies. "Look for anything with forbidden or beware or do not open," Kigo instructed fervently, hoping none of his companions took the labels as mere suggestions for the weak-hearted. His fellow villagers, more accustomed to tilling soils than deciphering ancient manuscripts, fondled the books gingerly as if they were fragile relics capable of detonating at the slightest provocation. The storyteller, whose name had been forgotten by the group and himself, now commonly referred to simply as the Bard, squinted at a particularly moth-eaten tome. "Ah, this one warns about unleashing apocalyptic doom. Quite a light red, I presume," he remarked dryly, his fingers waltzing over the cursed calligraphy as though inviting disaster for tea. Meanwhile, the engineer, a woman who had given up arguing with machines because they had started arguing back, wrestled with a jammed cabinet. "Ancient isn't always better, you antiquated piece of oh." The cabinet gave way, revealing not only several unimpressed spiders but a leather-bound book that practically radiated "mock me if you dare" vibes. "Here," she called out, dust particles swirling around like early attendees to a disaster's after-party. "It says closure for the doomed, a coder's last stand. I suppose that's warm-hearted and inviting enough." Kigo rushed over, his heart rhythm sinking with the emergency siren that was his excitement. His hands trembled as he took the book, possibly from anticipation, possibly from the unsettlingly chilly drafts that seemed to whisper spoilers. As he opened the book, the pages crackled, protesting after centuries of neglect. "Listen to this." Kigo sat cross-legged, surrounded by his motley crew, their faces candle-lit and intensely focused. "To wield the power of closure, one must first understand the essence of recursion, as repetitive as my mother's inquiry into my marital status at family gatherings." The Bard chuckled, adjusting his spectacles. "At least this book doesn't start with 'once upon a time.' How refreshingly original." They spent hours poring over the ancient codes, Akigo decoding the jargons with the enthusiasm of a historian unearthing a pun in hieroglyphics. Each algorithm unwrapped layers of possibilities, each loop an invitation to defy their fated doom. And here, Kigo's finger paused at a passage emboldened by time, it claims that executing this function could potentially solve our minion problem or make an excellent potato soup. It's a bit ambiguous. Ah, the thin line between saving the world and dinner preparations, the bard quipped, however shall we decide? With the Forbidden Book of Closure as their guide, they crafted their digital weapon, conscious of the ticking clock, and the potatoes that grew ever more restless in the dark. It was a conspiracy of starch and magic, one that might just stand a chance against the tyranny of Mr. Potato Head. And if all else failed, at least they'd have the soup. Amidst the dim glow of lanterns, several pairs of eyes flickered more with apprehension than the firelight as Kigo tapped away on his vintage mechanical keyboard, each click ringing out like a tiny, determined hammer against the anvil of fate. His companions huddled around him, casting dubious glances at the assortment of wires and screens that seemed lesser like a weapon and more like the aftermath of a tech store burglary. Are you quite sure this will disarm a magical creature that has successfully enchanted every potato head in the Northern Hemisphere? The old storyteller asked, stroking his beard as if coaxing the wisdom hidden within its tangles to come forth. Kigo paused, fingers hovering above the keyboard. As sure as one can be when the primary test subjects have been lines of code and not, say, actual magical entities. The mechanical engineer piped up, her voice echoing slightly off the library's stone walls, and just to be clear, we're banking on ancient closure code from a dusty tome that might as well have been a coffee table for spiders until an hour ago. Oh, absolutely, Kigo replied without missing a beat. We're on the cutting edge of about several centuries ago. As the code compiled, a series of beeps emitted from the machine, each one seemingly mocking their dire situation with cheerful electronic chirps. The room filled with an intense blue light, transforming the scene into what felt ominously like the climax of a particularly low-budget science fiction film. The LED lights are a nice touch, the storyteller noted dryly, momentarily distracted. Adds a bit of an apocalyptic ambience. Kigo smirked, an expression born of equal parts nerves and thrill. Ah, yes, aesthetic considerations are crucial when designing tools for mythological warfare. Next version might even come with customizable colors and mood music. The engineer surveyed the setup, nodding solemnly. Great, we're heading into a magic-infested dark forest with the equivalent of a glorified disco stick. No dance party is complete without one, Kigo quipped, his fingers dancing over the keyboard, prepping the device for their departure. The tension seemed to simmer down, temporarily lulled by their relentless sarcasm. As they packed up to leave, the storyteller slung a bag over his shoulder, sighing, "Well, I suppose if we're going to be chased by an army of demonic potatoes, we might as well do it style." "Exactly," Kigo affirmed, with a confidence that was perhaps more bravado than genuine belief. He then led the way out of the library, the beacon of their so-called disco stick leading them not to a dance floor but perhaps, just perhaps, to victory. Under the heavy canopy of gnarled branches, Kigo and his motley crew stood, their eyes squinting at the throngs of potato minions that blocked their path. The air was thick with the stench of earth and malevolence, or was that just overripe tubers? Armed with their newly crafted digital weapon, Kigo confidently stepped forward and typed the command to activate the closure-based spell. The device whirred, flickered, and spat out what looked like a small, rather underwhelming spark. Behold, the mighty potato peeler, he declared with a flourish worthy of a lesser-known Shakespearean reject. The minions, seemingly unimpressed or just downright confused, paused their menacing advance. One could almost see the gears, or perhaps the eyes, considering their vegetable condition, turning in their heads. "Is it just me?" mumbled the engineer in the group. "Or did we basically create a glorified microwave with delusions of grandeur?" Determined not to be outdone by root vegetables, Kigo adjusted his glasses and re-entered the command. The device now popped and fizzed, clearly offended. With a dramatic puff of smoke that would have made any smoke machine envious, it finally shot a beam directly at the approaching horde. The minions froze, some mid-wobble, as the beam passed over them. For a heart-stopping moment, nothing happened. Then, as if someone had hit the rewind button on a particularly boring documentary about potatoes, the minions started slowly retreating back towards the forest. The crew cheered, but their triumph was cut short when they realized the spell's effect was more akin to a mild inconvenience rather than the decisive victory they had hoped for. "Great, we've invented the world's first reversible potato march," quipped the storyteller dryly. "Historians will weep at our feet." Kigo, undeterred, scratched his head. "Back to the drawing board," he sighed, turning back to his device. The others groaned. It seemed their battle was less about defeating evil and more about debugging, which, in some circles, might be considered the same thing. Resigned yet resolute, they retreated under the cover of Kigo's semi-functional potato deterrent, plotting their next course of action which, with any luck, wouldn't involve any more vegetable puns or half-baked schemes. But as any good developer or chef knows, perfection is a process, and apparently, so is saving the world from sentient tubers. In the flickering light of a flickering campfire, one that seemed as reluctant as a Monday morning commuter, Kigo, the closure hero who had dared to code where no man had coded before, busily tapped away on his ancient laptop. The device was so old it might have been part of the ancient relics he had just retrieved, but it still ran his closure environment with less fuss than a well-fed cat. Surrounding him was his oddball ensemble of villagers, each sporting the kind of enthusiasm you'd reserve for your cousin's three-hour experimental jazz recital. The old storyteller, whose age was a closely guarded secret akin to a celebrity's real hair color, leaned over and squinted at Kigo's screen. "Is that the fearsome code weapon?" he asked, voice dripping with a skepticism usually reserved for miracle hair growth ads. "Yes," Kigo replied, with the patience of a saint, or perhaps just a very tired parent. "It's a function that will recursively dismantle Mr. Potato Head's control over his starchy minions." "Recursively, you say?" piped up the engineer, scratching his head with a wrench as if hoping to unscrew an insightful thought. "Sure, it wouldn't be quicker with a loop. Loops are wonderful. Like belt loops, reliable and straightforward." Ignoring the unhelpful hardware advice, Kigo continued, his fingers dancing across the keyboard with the elegance of a ballet dancer, if the dancer were strangely fixated on parentheses. "It's about elegance and power. You see, recursion in closure is like a fine wine turned sour if mishandled," quipped the storyteller, earning a glare hotter than the coffee they had run out of 2 days ago. Kigo sighed. The real challenge, it seemed, was not refining the code but maintaining his composure amidst his helpful companions. "No, it matures beautifully," he replied with a forced calmness. "It allows us to apply the same operation at each level of the data structure without explicitly tracking the iterations." As the night wore on, and the orb of the moon climbed higher as if trying to escape the conversation, Kigo debugged, refactored, and improved his script. Each line of code was a quiet rebellion against the chaos of Mr. Potato Head's vegetative tyranny. Finally, with a triumphant clackety-clack, he straightened up. "Done," he declared with the sort of finality one might use to conclude a particularly divisive family dinner. "Let's just hope it runs faster than the gossip about Mrs. Clance's alleged encounter with a garden gnome." There was a pause as the team digested the remark, the silence hanging awkwardly like someone had passed wind and everyone was too polite to mention it. Then, with a spark of unity flickering in their tired eyes, they gathered their gadgets and gizmos, their spirits buoyed by Kigo's breakthrough. Armed with fresh code and stale jokes, they prepared to face the dawn. Tomorrow, they would unleash the power of closure in the heart of the forest. Mr. Potato Head wouldn't know what hit him, metaphorically speaking, of course, since what would hit him was essentially very sophisticated math wrapped in curly braces. Under the nearly suffocating canopy of twisted branches that formed the highest corridors of Mr. Potato Head's stronghold, Kigo and his unlikely squad of potato rebels trudged forward. Their mission: to confront the self-crowned monarch of the starch-stuffed serfs. As they maneuvered through the dense undergrowth, the stealthy silence was often broken by Kigo's apprentice, muttering some variation of, "Are we there yet? Or I should have worn my more sensible boots." Despite the gravity of their quest, there wasn't a moment that passed without the mechanical engineer attempting to redesign everyone's footwear. With enough talk and a good Wi-Fi signal, he passionately explained, "Our shoes could be walking us to victory." This, of course, only made the storyteller roll his eyes and recount, for the umpteenth time, the tale of the tortoise and the hare, emphasizing that slow and steady did not, in fact, mean retrofitting your boots mid-journey. As they advanced, the forest seemed to press in closer, the trees like spectators leaning over a racetrack. Somewhere above them, a troop of birds, likely minions in ornithological disguise, squawked in what sounded suspiciously like Morse code. Either those birds are ordering takeout, Kigo joked dryly, or Mr. Potato Head has upgraded his surveillance technology. Finally, they reached what they had all been smelling for the past half mile, the dense, earthy aroma of 1,000 potatoes. But these were no ordinary potatoes. These were the minions' eyes everywhere, literally, as potatoes are wont to have eyes. It seemed Mr. Potato Head had stationed his spudliest soldiers around the periphery of his lair, a tangled mess of roots and vines that looked more organic produce market than menacing fortress. "Behold," whispered the storyteller dramatically, "the fort of the fiendish tuber titan. What perilous produce patrols these palisade?" Kigo suppressed a smile. "Let's hope there's a fryer inside with that oil those birds were probably ordering. It's time to make some hash browns." With a mix of determination and an undying appreciation for potato puns, they prepared their digital arsenal. The closure spells were ready, symbols and functions carefully crafted to disrupt the starchy legion awaiting them. The team exchanged glances, some filled with resolve, others with a hint of mystified terror at the puns still unfolding from Kigo's lips. "But first," Kigo announced, pulling a USB drive from his pocket dramatically, "let's see if their allegiances can be reformatted." And so, cloaked in a daring mixture of dread and dry wit, and following yet another pun too terrible to recount, they stepped forward, the thicket parting before them, as they moved to breach the inner sanctum of the forest's most feared and carb-heavy adversary. As Kigo and his eclectic band of villagers, now oddly reminiscent of a tech support team gone rogue, approached the inner sanctum of Mr. Potato Head, the air was thick with the stench of starch and malevolence. The forest around them was eerily quiet, even the birds seemed to have muted their tweets, possibly in anticipation of an epic fail or in respect to the brave souls marching towards almost certain doom. Mr. Potato Head, upon seeing them, couldn't resist a sardonic welcome. "Ah, the formidable Kigo and his merry band of keyboard warriors. Have you come to upgrade me to a newer version, or are you here to debug my existence?" The irony wasn't lost on Kigo, who retorted, "We're here to cancel your subscription to this forest. Your free trial has expired, and frankly, your user reviews are appalling. The showdown was not just a battle of magic, but a battle of wits. Mr. Potato Head, still fuming from Kigo's quip, summoned his army of minion potatoes, which, to the untrained eye, might have seemed terrifying if they weren't so oddly adorable. They waddled menacingly towards our heroes, gnashing their tiny sprouts. Kigo, channeling his inner Gandalf, raised his hand, in which he clutched his trusty laptop, now glowing ominously with arcane symbols and functional programming jargon. He began typing furiously, closure code flowing from his fingers like some sort of geeky magic spell. The scene had all the intensity of a high-stakes coding competition, only the stakes were slightly higher, involving life, death, and the future of potato cuisine as we know it. "You call this an attack?" Kigo laughed, dodging a particularly rotund potato minion that had launched itself at him like a misfired French fry. "I've seen scarier exceptions thrown at runtime." The minions paused, seemingly confused by their own existence and purpose. Existential dread can indeed be programmed into even the stodgiest of root vegetables. Kigo seized the moment, his code compiling, the air around his laptop shimmering with raw, unbridled data power. Mr. Potato Head, growing desperate, tried a different tack. "You can't delete me. I'm cloud-based," he boasted, a smirk evident in his tone. "That's where you're wrong," Kigo replied, his smirk equally potent. "I've just revoked your API keys." As the final line of code was executed, a pulse of light surged through the forest, turning the minion potatoes back into their docile, non-sentient forms, now mere memories of their former selves. Mr. Potato Head's eyes widened in horror as his connection to the dark arts of vegetable manipulation fizzled out. In the clearing silence, Kigo closed his laptop with a satisfying snap. "Consider yourself deprecated, Mr. Potato Head." As they walked away, leaving a depowered toy to contemplate his life choices amongst the trees, one of Kigo's teammates muttered, "Guess he wasn't ready to face the music. Or the tech support." As Kigo stood in the dank, root-tangled lair of Mr. Potato Head, his fingers flew over the keyboard, the flickering screen casting ghostly shadows. The air was thick with the earthy smell of raw potatoes and old revenge. Mr. Potato Head, his button eyes gleaming maliciously, watched the programmer with the disdain only an antiquated toy could muster. "Really, Kigo? Code at a time like this? Have you no flair for the dramatic?" Mr. Potato Head sneered, adjusting his detachable plastic ears as if preparing for a particularly grueling comedy roast rather than a battle of wits and magic. "Flair is for those who can't function," retorted Kigo, glancing back from his laptop with a smirk. "And let's not confuse drama with futility. You might feel undervalued in a mart right now, given your current, starch-based followers." The minions, a gaggle of rogue potatoes, shuffled uneasy on their little sprouted feet, unsure if they were being insulted or motivated. Mr. Potato Head harumphed, attempting to retain his composure and the remnants of his fearsome image. "Oh, come now. Let us not resort to tuber-specific slander. Besides, haven't you heard that playing with your food is ill-advised?" Mr. Potato Head chided, a smirk playing across his lips, his voice as smooth as mashed potatoes. Kigo chuckled, his fingers pausing for a moment over the keyboard. "Well, I'd hate to disappoint, but I find playing with my food rather productive. Especially when it starts playing back." The standoff might have been hilarious if the fate of the world's potatoes wasn't hanging in the balance. Every scathing comment between the coder and the Spud villain dripped with the ridiculous reality that this was not a typical Friday night. Finally, with a triumphant tap on the enter key, Kigo unleashed his master code. Mr. Potato Head's button eyes widened mere milliseconds before his control over the potato minions glitched spectacularly. As if someone had flicked a switch, the minions began dancing awkwardly, their eyes vacant, no longer menacing but merely tubercular in a comically creepy disco. "Looks like your mashup is over," Kigo quipped, unable to resist the pun as the minions bumped and jiggled like a bunch of russets at rave. "Insufferable nerd," Mr. Potato Head grumbled, his plastic mouth stuck in a frown. He looked down at his minions turned revelers with a mixture of confusion and defeat. "I suppose this is what I get for betting my dominion on a crop that's best served as side dishes." "Lesson learned then," Kigo replied, closing his laptop with a snap. "Besides, everyone knows that the hero always wins in tales like these. Perhaps you should have loaded more than just your carbohydrate arsenal." And with that, the battle of wits ended, leaving behind a lone defeated toy and a field of potatoes now safe to fulfill their destinies in stews and salads rather than sinister plots. In the clearing of the gnarled, sinister forest, Kigo faced Mr. Potato Head, the tyrannical tuber tormentor, across an arcane battlefield strewn with sprouting potato minions. The air was thick with the earthy scent of spuds and suspense. Arrayed in an ensemble fetched from the darkest corner of a child's toy box, Mr. Potato Head was an unsettling sight, his interchangeable facial features twisted in fury. Kigo, with a laptop balanced deftly on a nearby stump, an organic programming podium, typed furiously. His fingers danced over the keys with a rhythm that could rival the most seasoned concert pianist playing Chopin's nocturnes, if indeed Chopin had been inclined to compose odes to root vegetables and software. "Is that all you have?" Mr. Potato Head mocked, his voice echoing weirdly as if his speech dial were stuck between menacing and nasally. "A bit of sleight of hand on the keyboard?" "It's closure," Kigo replied, his tone flat, as though explaining why pizza is best served hot. "It's like magic, but for those who understand syntax and have a penchant for functional purity." The battle reached its peak as Kigo launched his final function. Words and symbols flashed across the screen, a luminous spell woven from the threads of logic and ancient code. It was less abracadabra and more require, ancient.clojurelib refer all, but it was magic nonetheless. With a grand flourish that would have impressed even the least impressible coding bootcamp instructor, Kigo pressed enter. A surge of digital energy scattered across the field, transforming the marauding minions back into harmless potatoes, which thudded into the underbrush with satisfying, and quite final, plops. Mr. Potato Head, watching as his empire crumbled into grocery produce, tried to make a run for it. Unfortunately, his escape plan was hindered by the fact that his legs were quite literally small, plastic stubs meant for static display and not for sprinting. "Curse you, Kigo!" Mr. Potato Head cried out, his expression stuck somewhere between angry and constipated. His hands weren't designed to portray a vast range of emotions. "And curse you for making this necessary," Kigo shot back, his laptop screen now displaying the blissfully blue wallpaper of peace. "No toy enjoys turning into a supervillain. Maybe stick to being a childhood memory." And so, with Mr. Potato Head defeated and his potato legion returned to their roots, peace was restored. The village celebrated with a festival that featured, ironically, a rather extensive menu of potato dishes, French fries, mashed potatoes, potato salad, the works. Kigo was hailed as a hero, though he modestly claimed he was just debugging reality. Mr. Potato Head, having no other prospects and perhaps a newfound humility, opened a small psychotherapy booth next to the village square. For a few cents, villagers could receive advice from someone who had literally been put together again after falling apart, figuratively and literally. It was, villagers agreed, oddly therapeutic, poking fun at one's own assembled visage while doling out wisdom. Life returned to normal, or as normal as it could be in a village once plagued by sentient vegetables. Kigo continued to code, teaching others the art of closure, ensuring that if ever there was another uprising, it could be quelled with quick keystrokes and cunning programming. It was, after all, just another day's work for a quite unconventional hero. I hope you have enjoyed the Deep Dreams podcast and have not actually heard this part because you are asleep.